Hello, good day to you, sir.
Mm-hmm, and I bid you a good morrow.
Indeed. How are things way up there? And never mind.
Actually, I think I'm further south than you are.
Yeah, I was doing a thing, a San Francisco thing. Never mind.
Oh. San Francisco's the worst.
I like San Francisco. It's no Chicago.
Okay, well, you're wrong.
I could be wrong.
Your preferences are wrong.
How dare you, sir?
So how you been adjusting your roto shapes?
Fine. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing any dramatic roto at the moment. I actually just wrapped something today, so that was nice.
What is involved in dramatic roto? Are you on the back of a train and you have to defuse the laptop? You're going to do the roto on?
You sort of hang upside down with this sort of like contraption that sort of tapes the laptop to your stomach, so you're sort of just precariously dangling and trying to do your work that way.
Oh, like Mission Impossible?
Yeah,
so
kinda.
Like from the ceiling you drop down.
Yeah, except that French guy doesn't try to double cross me.
You can't let your sweat hit the floor.
We have carpet, so it'll absorb it. It's very very old, very dirty carpet.
Oh, that's it's a nice vision. You really paint a picture, Dan.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's been here since the house was built. It needs to get torn out.
Okay.
Beige does not age well. Not just for carpet.
Doesn't it just get more beige?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay.
Mm. Anyway, mm-hmm. How's your week going?
It's moving through time in a forward trajectory. But time is a relative human concept. So I guess it's fine.
So you've been watching Star Trek?
No. Although a guy from Star Trek was in our movie tonight.
You want to get it out of the way up front, or are you going to point it out now?
Wouldn't that be getting it out of the way up front to point it out now?
I was looking at the cast list, and I said the same thing twice. Yes, you know what I mean.
Okay. Okay, well, we can get to it on Tuesday.
Sure. Which
is, yeah.
That's pay a joke. You for a cheeseburger. It's, wait, what?
No.
Wrong joke?
It's a joke. A bad joke. Tuesday. Anyway, it only means something to five people that are listening to this that watched Star Trek Generations. So those five people, feel free to send me a message and say, yes, Tuesday.
Yes.
That's what you do.
The whole tweet should just say, yes, period, Tuesday, period.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't get it.
We'll have to keep our distance. We don't want to get pulled in too.
Tractor beam.
Mm-hmm. Tractor beam.
We don't have a tractor beam.
You left space dock without a tractor beam.
It won't be installed until Tuesday.
It's not important. All you need to know is that our beloved Cameron in this film is the worst captain of a ship named Enterprise in all of Star Trek.
I could have told you that, and I haven't even seen it. Why would they let him be a captain?
I don't know. I mean, you'd think he would have been in enough trouble with his dad for wrecking that car that they wouldn't put him in charge of a starship, but...
He was grounded for life.
Mm-hmm.
You think he gets frustrated when they have issues on the in the Star Trek world there, and he just, like, kicks the front of the ship?
I don't know, because he didn't last very long on screen. His presence was short-lived.
Was he relieved of command, or did somebody shoot a laser at him?
He just isn't seen very... There is not a series, really, that explores the brave voyages of the Starship Enterprise NCC-1701-B. B is in Bacharach. So they don't do that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe just because he has sympathetic eyes, they would let him drive?
Well, you don't really drive when you're the captain, though.
Well... He doesn't actually have his hands on the controls, but he's driving.
No, not really. That's actually kind of a plot point. I'll just make you watch the first 15 minutes.
Does he not know how to drive? Did they revoke his driver's license?
You're just going to have to watch the first 15 minutes of Star Trek Generations, and it'll all make perfect sense to you. Okay. Listeners, tell Dan to watch the first 15 minutes.
He returned his starship, and there were twice as many miles on it as he left with, and the High Council got really mad and revoked his license. I don't know how Star Trek works.
Ah, Dan, nobody would have guessed that. So it's fine. It's
space.
Mm-hmm. The final frontier.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. But these aren't, because we're actually talking about high school. So that's important.
But man, were there any other? My high school was just like this.
It was.
Yeah. Just
did you
like
have
it.
the what was it, the Skatos, the what were all the made up names?
The
Wastoids.
I was gonna write all those down, but I couldn't keep track.
Yeah, that's what IMDb quote page is for. But the yeah, so you had a good high school experience then?
No.
No, me neither. My high school was not really like this, and I didn't really know a Ferris per se, but I can definitely identify with our protagonist's companion Cameron, who doesn't want to get in trouble for anything. So I can identify with that introversion and isolation and sadness and bitterness and frustration.
I hate to cut you off on the sadness, bitterness, and frustration, but it's that time of the show again where my USB hub flakes out, so I'm going to unplug it and bypass it. Sorry.
This is Dan's hub. It's broken, and it ruins the show when it breaks. The end of the song is probably going to come at some point. This isn't really a song.
Let me save the QuickTime. Have you been
saving QuickTime movie files?
Listening to a lot of Flophouse lately?
No. Did you listen to Upgrade?
I'm not all the way through it. I'm in Mike at the movies.
Well, at the beginning of Mike at the movies, there was a song.
Oh yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Well, do you not recognize the influence of that? Especially when he mentioned Elliot at the end.
Yeah,
of
it was. It was a spot on performance.
I thought so too. We'll give him an award.
Oh, I meant yours.
In the next,
referencing his.
Oh, mine. Well, you're not leaving that in the show, are you?
Well, I'm not gonna edit this one. Spoiler alert.
Oh. Listeners, surprise. Welcome to.
We'll see.
The show.
If this comes out next week, maybe.
No, it's fine. I got it. I got your back, Dan. Not unlike how Ferris really actually has Cameron's back in the film that we watched.
And eventually, Genie has his back as well.
Mm-hmm. But, don't fall in a pool, Dan.
Well, it didn't really fall. He just kind of did like a very ungraceful front flip.
Yeah, but it wasn't really much of a flip. It was just sort of like a gravity adjustment.
A gravity adjustment. I would have gone with like a tuck and roll, or like a not so much of a tuck, but more of a roll.
How many points would you give it out of 10?
If we're rating him for his lack of movement, probably an 8. If we're rating him on a traditional diving scale, probably a 2.
Okay. I would go in a more severe direction than you did. And I would give him a 9 for his acting performance in the film, and I would give him a 1 for actually doing this, and if this was actually his
goal. Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, he said he didn't really know what he was going to go to college for or study, and I assume he's not going to get there on a diving scholarship, so that's a bummer for him. Just one less thing that's going to help him out.
Yeah. Well, life sucks.
Life sucks when your family's rich and you have a Ferrari to drive around.
I mean, is there any other way to look at this than white privilege?
not many ways. I mean, hey, 1986, it was a different time, so maybe skipping school and playing hooky and having fun was, you know, a little lighter than it would be today, but I don't think it would be this light.
Yeah. The poor kid, he doesn't have a car, he just has a computer.
yeah, this day and age, I think that would probably be preferable for someone his age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there are all those reports about how millennials don't want to go outside and do things and have cars and pay for insurance and stuff. And so they just stay in their parents' house. And then they send text messages and Vines and Snapchats.
I mean, really, that's more fun than like going downtown and going to a museum or something.
Yeah, although you probably don't want to do with that, what was it, EGA monitor that he had? that would have been unpleasant. Could you imagine sending, well, just the throughput on that? I don't think you could display images, but maybe you could get one of those programs that does the ASCII things where it, like, turns it into blocks of little glyphs of color, of orange on the brown screen. So,
yeah, I mean, it definitely looked like he was in some sort of text-based interface there when he was hacking his way into the school.
Yeah, well, you know, he wasn't working.
I was going to say, you would think he would have learned his lesson there.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only winning move is not to be absent.
there's a good title for you.
Mm-hmm. Or not. But so anyway, listeners who've obviously read everything before clicking on this, we are talking about Ferris Bueller's day off. It is a day that he had off, not on, as some might be led to believe if they didn't read the full title, but off. Mm. He does stuff, and he is supposed to not be doing those things, and he does it anyways, and he gets away with it. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But the tension is about whether or not he will get away with it. So that's the thing. That's what we got going on here.
Rascally youth getting out there in the real world and learning what it's all about to be an adult.
Yes. Yay.
A very foreign concept for a John Hughes movie.
Mm-hmm. It was a style at the time.
One of these days. One of these days we'll stop.
Never. Never give up, never surrender. But so the movie starts.
John Hughes' version of Galaxy Quest.
Oh, that would have been weird. Well, he might get a chance if they greenlight that TV show they're talking about.
No, he died.
Oh, John Hughes is dead?
Yeah, 2009.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
John Hughes, I'm sorry for insinuating that you would do that television show.
Dangling the prospect of a television show in front of him?
Yes. So sorry. But moving on awkwardly past that as briskly as possible, the film is iconic and is a cult classic and classic, and everybody watches it no matter who or what you are, what you do. It is good stuff, and it is required viewing. Wouldn't you agree, Dan?
I would agree. There is never a moment where it is not on television. I'm sure that's a true statement that I have not yet vetted, but I stand behind it.
Okay, well, I'm glad we stand behind our vets. But it is a Ferrari in this film. So the other thing I was going to mention is, didn't you have like a theory that you had pitched to me before where when I had mentioned Election one time, you had a whole theory about how he was a... It was actually a continuation of Ferris Bueller's character from this film to adulthood, where he's actually teaching at a high school.
I don't remember saying that, but I'll totally take credit for it because it sounds interesting, like something we should talk about.
Okay, whoever else I was talking to, I'm very sorry, but Dan stole this from you.
No,
it was all Dan.
It may have been me because wasn't there some mention that they were going to try and do a sequel to this, and I said that would be a terrible idea. And maybe they could have just used Election as a makeshift sequel where all of the joy has been sucked from his life and he is now a joyless teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Reaping what he sows.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Great times. But this movie starts off with the parents, and we have our introduction to, well, really the lack of a fourth wall for the next hour and change.
It's definitely one of the most famous movies that breaks the fourth wall, isn't it?
I would agree. Especially even the shots that don't break the fourth wall are staged in such a way that everything's in the center of the frame dead on for many of these shots. So it feels like you are put into the perspective of the viewer viewing it there, which is peculiar. It's an interesting choice. But you shouldn't really do that a lot in movies because that doesn't work. But here it kind of works if you're just breaking the fourth wall, like left and right.
It's possible there was more of it throughout the movie. In this one, it's kind of constrained to the beginning and then, like, kind of randomly throughout the end there a little bit. But it kind of disappears for a while, doesn't it?
It shows up every now and then. Like, he winks and turns to the camera and stuff and says a couple little things. But in terms of, like, monologuing to the camera, it's mostly at the beginning. And then again at the end when he gets up when Cameron's catatonic and he's talking right in front of Sloane and he's just like, yeah, so I really would marry her and blah, blah, blah. I don't know what we're going to do with high school. And it's just like, they're right there. And so unlike some of the other scenes where he has his monologues and there's no one else in the room or he's speaking directly to camera and there's no one else visible in the frame, in that particular one at the end, he's monologuing to the camera while walking away from the characters who are obviously within earshot. So it is a conceit.
Well,
with
these
Shakespearean asides,
we accept it because he's charming and a great character, and at least he doesn't like float out of a picture frame into a chair in a museum like some other movie, and then float back into the scene that way. He just steps out and then steps back in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you put your Ferris in, you put your Ferris out, you put your Ferris in, and then you have a fourth wall. Okay, so
I admire your bravery on that.
So we are introduced to the parents who are very worried about their obviously totally completely not sick child. Who's hamming it up. There is literally no way that any normal person would buy that this person in this bed is sick. Although we don't even find that out yet. We just know his hands are clammy. How horrible, his hands are clammy. And then we get the rundown of how he did that later, with the step-by-step instructions. Which I really appreciated the text overlay because,
that was good.
I wouldn't have been able to keep track of that stuff. I wonder if unfortunately, I don't think they were using a markdown for that numbered list. But in a modern movie, you could.
Sure.
Yes. we quickly established that he's gonna be faking his illness. The parents leave, and of course, there is a confrontation with Ferris's sister, played by Jennifer Grey. Who isn't buying it, because she, like us, can see that he is completely not sick. And she points out how unjust this is and how he gets whatever he wants and is treated way better than she is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if you are someone who has a sibling, perhaps you might have some ability to identify with these kinds of conversations. So good writing there, John. Then the everybody leaves. They venture off, and the Ferris gets up and starts going through his plans and talking about his day and what he's going to do and taking the shower. And
he has an MTV montage. I found that incredibly peculiar that there was just that protracted shot with the MTV intro, like that kicked off his intro.
Yeah, that was really weird. Because it doesn't actually do anything in the story. He's not watching MTV, but they have a shot in there of the MTV interstitial or whatever this was on a TV, but then it cuts back and does other stuff. I don't know if they initially shot that for some other reason, and then they were just like, nah, it's too good. Keep it. But
I just wanted to get the flavor of the kind of kid he was. He's the kind of kid who watches MTV. It was probably in his character description in the script, so they had to shoot it.
Yeah, well, you know what they say, MTV generation. So they
is that technically, you know, 1986?
I don't know how it works. generations, how do they work? Other than Star Trek, but the
millennials of 1986. We'll just say that because it sounds completely ridiculous.
Yes, well, they are. Ferris takes his shower and gets ready and has this philosophical conversation about how he doesn't really need to study about European socialists and that, you know, he is the walrus, cuckoo, cuckoo. And then
he bookmarks the movie with his motto of life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around every once in a while, you might miss it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very good motto. Totally something someone would say.
Yeah, it's a normal thing high school kids say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Keep moving and get out of the way of life. So we establish all that, and then we are cutting back to the Ben Stein teaching his economics class, which is insanely boring. We get a few shots of that, and asking where Bueller is. Bueller. Very, very famous scene.
It's not even a famous scene. It's a famous shot.
Yes.
I forgot all the rest of it with that girl who explains how her brother's, sister's, boyfriend's, cousin's, friends know a guy who saw him pass out at 31 Flavors last night or something. That was adorable.
Yes. And for kids these days, 31 Flavors is slang for Baskin-Robbins, which is a ice cream chain that used to be around before Cold Stone, which was a thing before Pinkberry. So there you go, children. I've explained confections to you. So they have this whole thing occur. And they we also establish that Cameron is homesick and that Ferris will be... using Cameron's car with Cameron in order to enact a very intricate plan for how he wants to spend his ninth day off this semester sick.
Because he can't take any more days off. They'll definitely throw him in school jail or whatever for more than 9 days being absent, which I don't know why that's a problem since he just immediately hacks it and changes it to 3 or 2.
Yeah,
sorry.
Well, I mean, somebody might have printed that out at some point or something. Who knows? I really know how bookkeeping was done for absences in 1986 in Chicago.
Well, Grace really seems like she's on top of everything.
She totally does. I love Grace. She's a ditz. Especially when she takes the pencils out of her hair during that first scene.
So great. There are so many great moments in this movie. The movie doesn't even need to make any sense. It's just so many of these small pieces, the lines or the looks or the action are just burned into everyone's memory, and it's just adorable things that everyone loves.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. It's all good stuff. I like it. He manipulates Cameron, which doesn't require a lot of manipulation.
He's dying.
Let's face it, Cameron's a doormat. Cameron's illness does not seem to be of the body as much as it is of the mind. He's a little tightly wound.
well, you know, it's some... lump of coal.
Yes, diamond. So shine on you crazy diamonds. But they establish this whole thing of his illness, only to basically drop it for the rest of the film. And they he goes to his car, and there's this lovely scene of him, you know, debating whether or not he's gonna go and whether or not he's gonna do it, and then he decides he's not going to, and then we get that lovely shot through the front of the car to the defocused Cameron walking through the back and forth and then jumping up and down. Which I think really sells it. I love that shot.
it's a well shot scene.
Yeah, and then of course he goes, and they have decided they're going to manipulate the situation in order to get Ferris's girlfriend out of school as well. She obviously can't call out sick because she's there, and that would be suspicious. But.
He should
instead,
have sent her the memo the night before.
Yeah, instead they kill her grandmother. Which is an interesting choice, because it seems like the kind of thing somebody might eventually be able to fact check. Fortunately, the only person who would care about that is disinclined to do so by the end of the film.
Well, you know, 1986, maybe there wasn't an easy way to check up on these sorts of things.
Yes, like asking. But... because that is his plan here, is that he's going to ask. You know, he doesn't buy this for a second. He thinks that this must be Ferris's doing, because she might be going out with Ferris. And indeed, Grace thinks, you know, it's so hard to tell who they're going out with these days. And then says that it might be Ferris.
She is pretty hip in that white leather jacket with fringe.
Yes. The hair and the outfits in this movie are so perfect. Especially the mom's hair. That is amazing what they did there with that like crazy hairspray mullet thing that's going on. But it's a thing. And so they have this whole thing where he doesn't buy it. He's telling Grace that he wants the father's phone number and that he's going to call and, you know, find out for sure about this dead grandmother. And of course, the phone rings inconspicuously right at this time. He picks it up and someone's on the phone and it claims to be the dad. And of course, it is not, because it is Cameron doing a funny voice, one would buy. Yes. So many funny voices in this film. And then Grace gets a call from Ferris in the other room. And there's this lovely dramatic tension from this with silent shouting and knocking over stuff on a desk and trying to resolve the situation. And of course, there's a little bit of a freak out because they didn't exactly rehearse how the handoff would occur from Sloane to leave the school. And so they unfortunately arrange that the father will be picking her up in person. So that wasn't a good plan.
It's a great scene where he basically slaps the phone out of his hands and kicks him.
Yeah, you hit me. I didn't hit you. You hit me.
I lightly slapped you.
So anyway, they agree, of course, to take Cameron's dad's car because no one would believe that Cameron's dad drives Cameron's car, which is a piece of junk. However, this is not a good plan for a couple of other reasons. But they take the car and then they go pick up Sloane, and there is a nice big smooch, which again reignites and reinvigorates the suspicions of our dean of students.
Them speeding away and throwing their hands in the air and shouting and, you know, just hooray.
Yeah. That was a clue. So they go to downtown Chicago and they're gonna engage in their day of revelry and merriment. And this starts with dropping off the car at a garage. A reputable, okay, A1 park location, which is, you know, famous for their history of never ever mistreating cars. And so they hand it off to the guy, and Cameron is very suspicious about this, and it's like, oh, it'll be fine, and, you know, turns the corner and the guy jumps in and then they go joyriding. So that'll not be a plot point later. The kids all go off to experience the wonders of Chicago, including a lovely scene at a restaurant. But first, we get the Sears Tower, which is now the, what is it, Hancock, or I don't even know. I'm gonna call it the Sears Tower because that's the way God intended it to be.
Yeah, last time I was there was Willis or something. Who knows where it is now?
Yeah, one of those things. Who cares?
World's tallest building, according to this movie.
Yeah, well, that's not true anymore, but it was something to be proud of with John Hughes' Chicago Pride.
Is he from Chicago?
Yes. Well, that's why like every single movie he ever does is in Chicago, Dan.
Well, I don't know that.
You didn't notice everything was in Chicago?
I don't pay attention to these sorts of things. Unless it has sort of like downtown landmarks that are part of the plot. I don't pay attention to that.
Okay. Well, remember Kevin McAllister?
Oh, yeah, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's two.
Yes. Just, well, you can keep digging later after the podcast.
Sure.
It's fine.
I'll go do some research.
Yes. They have the whole thing here with the stuff. And then they go to their lunch at Chez Cui, with the lovely snooty maitre d'. who is notable for being a snooty.
He's very good at it.
Yes, he's quite good at it. They you know, pretend to be the Sausage King of Chicago, and they sit down to their lunch of pancreas. And then they...
That's one of those lines that I never really heard, you know, when you're just casually watching on TV, watching this time. You know, we had a great day. We ate pancreas.
Yes, and he makes that face, the pursed lips.
There's so many lines like that. Like, the other part, when Mr. Rooney decides that he's going to go track him down, the line I wrote that is, I'm not going to let some kid like this leave my cheese out in the wind. Like, what does that even mean? But I love it.
Yeah, or when Jennifer Grey calls her brother somebody comes up and they're like, oh, what do you have against Ferris or whatever it is that say, and she goes, that trouser snake. It's just like, oh, that's just great writing. So it's the 80s. It's the 80s. You got to say penis, but John Hughes is classier than just saying penis. He said trouser snake.
I'm a fan of Finsky for a $5 bill. That was good. I don't think I've heard that in another movie.
I don't think I've heard that either. I love the way that the maitre d' like tries to wipe it off of his hands as quickly as possible. This is dirty money. That's a nice moment. But yeah, there's layers to this film that you can only enjoy more on repeated viewings. So thank God it's on Netflix, because that way you can save money. They almost run into his dad, but then escape in a like Three Stooges taxi cab maneuver.
He was so busy fourth walling in the bathroom that he didn't notice that his dad was in the stall, which, ew, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Just bathrooms. Just gross.
You know, they had a very attentive bathroom attendant in there, and he takes the mint and says, mint, as he walks out, which is very nice.
I would never, ever, 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 ever take a mint. In a bathroom.
You mean an unwrapped mint in a bowl sitting on the counter in a public restroom? You wouldn't do that?
No, it's not on my list of things to do. I don't have a lot of rules, Dan, but rule number one, don't take a mint from a tray in a public bathroom.
Well, you know, it was 1986. There were less diseases spread around through bathrooms.
It was the style at the time.
Sure. Yeah, it was definitely the style of time to have an old gentleman sitting there in a white jacket with a black bow tie.
Yes. And hopefully nobody stuck their hand in the candy dish with a raging case of herpes. So, scorching case of herpes.
Right.
Goodness.
Certainly, I hope they wouldn't have hand herpes, because that would be a difficult thing to have.
Well, maybe they didn't wash their hands, but...
oh, dear.
Some people don't do that in bathrooms, and I find it alarming.
Well, this is a very fancy French restaurant, so we're assuming that all the people who eat there are very classy people. If there was a place where it was safe to eat a mint, an opened mint out of a bowl in a bathroom, it would probably be this restaurant.
I like how we spent like 5 minutes talking about mints and bathrooms, Dan.
Well, it's, you know, we have to, you know, satisfy people's expectations of our ridiculous discussions.
Yes, yes.
You want to talk about burritos for a little while? What kind of burrito do you think Ferris Bueller would have on his day off?
I don't know. Well, I mean, are we talking about like in context of this film or like nowadays?
Because
I don't see burritos being a popular Chicago food.
Well, I mean, after the rise of Chipotle, I'm sure they're all over Chicago.
Yeah, but I mean, back in the era of 1986, I mean, what would he realistically have had? I mean, did they even have Taco Bells? Or whatever they were?
That is a good question. We should get in touch with Dr. Drang. He was definitely around the Chicago area in 1986. I think he's been there his whole life. But, I mean, you know, he's old enough to remember.
Can he draw us a map of how likely it would be for someone in Chicago who lived in the suburb that Ferris Bueller lived in to intersect with a restaurant that would have a burrito?
Plot the likelihood that he would pass by somewhere that sold burritos on his days off?
Yes, yes. And then if he could, use the gas law to find out the pressure of the burrito wrapper around the burrito itself.
I think you're thinking of Euler's constant.
Oh, I think you're thinking of Bayer patterns.
Now we're back around to visual effects. There are no Bayer patterns in this movie. It's all shot on film, and it looks so much better because of it.
Yeah, it's those giant golf ball sized grains of film, especially when they do that zoom in crop
on the pointillism.
On the photo. Yes. Well, you can't tell because it's pointillism. Only you can.
the film grains are the size of mints in a bathroom bowl, and we can move on from there because we just brought it back around in a circle.
Yes. Yes, this circle like a bathroom bowl. So where was I? So they make off with their whole thing of the lunch, and they go to the art museum, art institute.
For a moment, who paid for the lunch? Are we to assume that they got it free for being insulted?
I don't know who did. I know that Ferris seems to have cash from something. They keep buying things, so
well, it's a rather expensive restaurant.
Well, maybe they broke into their savings or something, or maybe they got a discount. They got a free dessert for not shouting rat. Who knows? They threw in some pancreas sausage.
Mm.
So they go to the art institute and they have that montage of art and looking at art. And music. And so that's a nice moment. And then they get on up out of there and they have a taxi cab scene where they almost run into the dad again. And they get the whole German parade scene in through here. So that's nice. Cause it's all about respecting where you came from and your culture. And then, you know, singing, well, lip syncing on a float in a weird vest
to a
cardigan thing.
Hey, can we talk about his penchant for animal print? I don't understand. Was this a 1986 thing? Because it looks ridiculous.
Well, I mean, he was a hipster of 1986.
the pleated front pants, and then is it cheetah, leopard, one of those two?
Yeah, it might be a Alita or a Shepherd. I'm not sure. Both of them, maybe.
And the swim trunks or were those boxers or whatever he was swimming in later. Same thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's like the like the hipster of the time of the era.
It looks to me like they just grabbed part of the wardrobe left over from Pretty in Pink and just gave it to him and said, like, here you go. This will work for you. Just don't wear the hat or the glasses.
I've never seen Pretty in Pink.
It's fine.
Yeah. Okay, moving on.
It's got some interesting fashion points. She custom builds herself a dress that looks like a cardboard box.
Yes. Oh, and Vice Principal Rooney or Dean Rooney or whatever.
I wrote down Dean Rooney because I don't even know what it is. Is he the principal?
I thought they referred to him initially as the Dean of Students.
Oh, that sounds about right.
I don't think he's the actual principal. It was a little vague. I don't know what's happening. Anyway, he's a jerk, and he tries to bust him out of pizza parlor, and they're at the baseball game that's on in the background. What's the score? Nothing. Who's winning? The Bears. And
for non-sports ball people, let's pause and just say that the Bears is not a baseball team. They are a football team.
Yes.
That's the joke. Yes.
Oh, right, it's the Cubs that are the baseball team, right?
I mean, technically a Cub is a bear, but in the context of Chicago, no.
No, but that's what I mean. It's like, I actually thought that was the baseball team that was playing.
No, the Bears are a football team.
Okay. Is that the one where you catch it?
It's the one where people throw things and catch things.
But they run to the goals. They don't go around the bases, right?
Right. There was running around bases in the one that was on TV, and there's running in ostensibly straight lines in the one that is part of the joke.
Okay. All right. That's good.
One of the teams wears blue, and the other one wears a slightly darker color of blue.
That's a great way to tell them apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they play their things, and they do the stuffs. You know, catch balls. So Rooney decides, after trying to go to this arcade pizza parlor, that he's going to instead go right to Ferris's house and bust him there, which, you know, probably would have made more sense than just skulking around pizza parlors.
Well, I have questions about this. I guess I'm jumping a little ahead, but he rings the doorbell and he gets the automated tape response because Ferris is apparently an electronics whiz and has hooked up a tape player to the doorbell so he can pretend to be home.
It's a good workflow.
Yeah, it's a very good workflow. I don't know if you wrote that in Python or not, but so Mr. Rooney rings the doorbell again because he's very annoyed and he's having none of this calm response that's on the tape. And he finds out very quickly that Ferris is playing a joke because he's not home and it's a tape and blah, blah, blah. At that point, why would he be inclined to break into the house if he knows that it's a tape and Ferris is probably not there? Like, what is he looking for, like, evidence? Is he going to go take photos of the empty bed or something?
No, it doesn't make any sense. I agree with you. His motivation is blurry and off. Because it seems like he's out for vengeance in, like, I'm going to hurt you kind of a way, which is not really productive or helpful.
Well, I mean, he doesn't want his cheese out in the wind or whatever he said earlier.
Yeah, I mean, what's he going to do? He's going to go in there, grab him, take him out to the police or hold him until something, or like he's gonna break in because of the recording and then take the recording as evidence. I mean, that might be the most logical thing that I could think of, but even that is just like you're an insane person.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to break in and find Ferris in there, that would be proving himself wrong immediately. I mean, what's he going to do? Is he going to go sit in like a darkened room in a chair like a Bond villain and wait for somebody to come in and turn the lights on?
Gross. You should read why Jeffrey Jones was arrested. Yikes. So, Rooney breaks into the... Well, tries to break in, steps in the mud. His shoe is gross now, sprays off the shoe. Then he's like, sits down to put it back on. He looks, and there's this lovely shot of looking over his shoulder. And of course, there's a dog door. And we get the slow realization that, of course, there's a dog door. And he stupidly tried to open the window. So he sticks his head in, and we find out we have a dog, which I'm just going to call Fluffy. I don't know what the dog's name is, but Fluffy
angry
seems like
Rottweiler.
Yes, it just seems like that. It's a total Fluffy. Like that's a great name for it. Because it's angry and chases after him, and we get a nice little jump cut, little scene montage of them using different clips of him running back and forth with this window. Where they just sort of cut out the intervening parts, and you can see the window move very slightly because they're editing that to make it go faster. He gets on the other side of the door, closes the door to the fence, and doesn't have his shoe, but wants it back, and comes up with this plan to knock out the dog with a potted plant. Again, not really called for here. Not a good plan.
Well, you know, he holds a grudge. It's more revenge, and the dog tore up his suit and his shoe. So, and then the flowers from the faculty telling Ferris to get better probably put him over the edge again.
Yeah, and of course Jennifer Grey.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer Grey 1.0 when she still looked like Jennifer Grey.
Yes, that nose. I'm so sorry that she decided not to. Anyway, everyone's beautiful. That's what I want to say. Your inner beauty shines through.
I think she looked good in this movie.
No, but that's what I'm saying is, like, I don't think she needed to have a nose job. But, you know, if she felt better afterwards, then that's her thing. So anyway, she arrives in a fury in her Pontiac Fiero, or whatever that is.
That's a Pontiac Fiero. Yeah. My dad had one with the fastback version, red one.
Oh, good. Did you know that they were huge fire hazards because the engines were in the back?
Oh, yeah. His met its demise in the way of running into a large rock.
ouch.
They're made out of plastic and they shatter.
Oh, well.
What I'm saying is she should drive more carefully tough. Around that curvy driveway.
Yes. Well, fortunately, they didn't have a little metal lawn jockey to knock over at this house. So her car was fine. But she in a righteous fury, storms into the house. And Rooney's like, oh, I can just get in the front door now. Which also...
That's a thing not creepy people would do.
Yes, it's totally... Everything about this, not a good plan. Everything from when he goes to this house on is just a bad, bad plan. He is someone who is obsessed with being right about this, to the point where he is a sociopath, because this is not proper behavior. She goes upstairs, tries to get on the phone with her mom to, you know, point out that Ferris is indeed not home.
She kicks the door in and the mannequin goes flying out of bed with that contraption that made it look like it was rolling around when they opened the door, which I always like.
Yeah, well, actually, I don't like it when she does it because technically it should have rolled over to the side off the bed instead of springing upwards because that's not the mechanical movement that was established earlier in the film.
Well, maybe she broke a part of it when she kicked it so hard.
Yes. She broke the spinny part. She's upset. And she can't get a hold of her mom, but hears something downstairs, so thinks that Ferris might be in the house. She thinks somebody's downstairs. She goes downstairs. She thinks she's going to catch Ferris, and Rooney thinks he's going to catch Ferris, and surprise, screaming and a kick to the face, and Rooney's down, and she runs upstairs screaming and calls the police.
Makes it all the way upstairs before he hits the ground in his slow motion fall.
Oh, there are like five cuts of him getting kicked and falling over.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty great.
Got to make sure they see that.
Yeah, and right after he gets knocked down is also our first shot of his car getting a ticket for parking in front of a fire hydrant. And then when he wakes up and she is on the phone with the police, which must have been like, I don't know, a minute or two later, then he all of a sudden has like five tickets on his car. And then when he's washing his face she's threatening him over the intercom. Then we cut back outside to a tow truck attaching itself to his car. So, you know, I don't think that's legal, what they did there in the span of,
well, he parked
what,
in front of a fire
minutes?
Hydrant. He's blocking a fire hydrant, and they're very serious about their parking enforcement in the suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah, but you can't give someone five tickets and tow their car in the span of 10 minutes. You couldn't even get the tow truck to show up in 10 minutes.
Apparently you can in a John Hughes movie. There's a lot of like simultaneous continuity. Like all of these scenes are intercut with each other essentially through the entire course of the movie. We're jumping back and forth between Rooney and Ferris and Jennifer Grey and all of their different stories sort of happening all at the same time. And it's not so much like plays out a linear sequence just and then we jump to the next place. It's all spliced together. I'm curious what the editing process on this was like, if this was the intention all along, or if they decided to go back and sort of splice little bits and pieces here and there, because sometimes it'll just be like one shot from another scene where you jump back over to the school to see Jennifer Grey, like, you know, pull up outside his PE class jogging around to see that he's not in the line of people jogging and then drives away. It's just like one shot that references something that they were saying in the other scene.
Yeah. Or the Save Ferris.
water tower.
Yeah, that was a good one. She is good at being angry, and so she is unable to get help from the police, calls in the intercom, says that she has a scorching case of herpes and a handgun, he takes this as his cue to actually leave the house, because this is probably not going to work out well for him, he decides now, and he, unfortunately limps in such a way that his wallet falls out of his pants onto the floor. Of the kitchen.
Well, suit is shredded.
Yes. Well, obviously the inner pocket lining was torn. You know, he's a he's he's a dean of students. He can't afford fancy suits.
Well, I mean, you know, Rottweilers, they're trained to go for the pockets. So, you know, the wallet falls out and they can leave some sort of trail behind of who the bad guy was.
Yeah, breadcrumbs. It's Hansel and Gretel stuff.
Yeah.
Classic 101 dog biting.
that Rottweiler has Hansel and Gretel training.
So...
I would love to see like a training academy for dogs that specifically teaches them these sort of like spy tactics of what to do if somebody breaks into the house. Not only do you bite them in like the Achilles tendon because that really hurts, but you make sure that you tear here, here, and here because this is where humans store things that will help identify them.
Yes.
Make sure you draw blood so you can get DNA.
Well, just make sure it's all CSI approved. We can tie that in for branding.
Is it the crime lab that does the actual training of the dogs, or is it just sort of like a partnership?
What if you could train dogs to be the crime lab?
So,
oh my God, what if you had a Labrador that, and you could call him Crime Lab?
We're going to take this sample down to the crime lab, and he's going to smell the strand of hair and go running through the suburbs until he finds Ernie.
Oh my God. Dan, we've cracked it. CBS, get on the phone with Les Movies. We've got a show.
It's called Crime Lab. I mean, the people who greenlit Air Bud would be sure to be behind this. We're gonna take it to the crime lab. So he's not just biting Rooney. He's actually trying to take a blood sample, and he just doesn't have opposable thumbs. So this is the only way he can take the sample.
Yes, it's all about DNA.
Wait, I'm thinking of other puns like lab coat. You know, you give the dog like an egg once a year on their food, so because it improves their lab coat.
Oh,
boy! What the hell were we talking about? Were we just talking about a movie?
Yeah. So his car gets towed, and he limps off after it, but then gives up for 5 seconds, and then runs.
Well, he leaves the keys in the door of the car, so he's fully defeated.
Yes. Well, he's limping along on his defeats. That happens to him. Meanwhile, I think I'm trying to unravel this in such a way that it makes sense. Ferris did the parade at this part, and they are retrieving their car, and they're finding out that it has the miles on it, that are not good miles to have. And again, there is that one shot in this movie that's pretty famous with the Star Wars music and the slow motion, the two guys from the garage joyriding. That happened earlier. And they pull up and they're like, oh, wow, we got our car back fast. And so that's not anything to be worried about. And as they drive away, they find out the mileage is not what it's supposed to be. And it needs to be exactly like in between rotations on certain numbers. And so it's not even close. And so their plan to put it up and just unwind the miles by going in reverse, which is something you could do on old cars. Well, that unfortunately... is what they gotta deal with. But before that, Cameron has a little bit of a freak out and goes catatonic. And they take him to the lake, for lake air or something. And he lies on the wall, and this is where we have that weird aside, and where he's like, I'm totally serious about marrying her. And then Cameron's still not conscious, and so I think the pool is Sloane's house. But I'm not sure. And they, because I don't think it's Cameron's house, because it's not all like moderny and stuff and in the woods. And it doesn't seem like it's Ferris's house, because I don't think he had a pool in the backyard.
Well, if so it's, I think it's Sloane's house, why would she change outside by the pool instead of going inside?
Maybe she was in a rush.
she was in a rush with her catatonic friend who's just sitting in a chair not moving.
I don't know, Dan. I mean, it could have just been some rando's house, but I have no idea.
They took the time to precariously put the chair out on the end of the diving board and set Cameron in it in apparently his catatonic state, but they couldn't be bothered to like go inside to change their clothes.
It doesn't really seem... Well, I mean, would you leave him unsupervised around a pool?
I wouldn't put him on the end of a diving board.
No. Well, I mean, you know, talk about bad decisions. And this is where he has his gravity altercation. And he sits at the bottom of the pool, which is awfully relaxing if you've never done that before.
Totally.
And Ferris worries, jumps in after him, pulls him up. And then we quickly find out that Cameron was just kidding. That he's okay, that he's not catatonic. But this was a way of getting back at Ferris. And they go to Cameron's house, to his dad's garage, to unwind the miles. And unfortunately, it doesn't appear that the miles are coming off, because this is, of course, a couple model years too late for that trick to work. And then he freaks out and he's like, I can't hide this thing. And then he freaks out some more. And this is where, you know, you wind someone so tight that they just kick a Ferrari into a ravine. And so that happened.
It's a very expensive tantrum.
Yes, it is. And there's a lot of tension in this scene, because it's, you know, it's not going to go well because it hasn't unwound. And you also know that it's still running, and you also know that he is kicking it, and you also know that the jack has budged in the back. So it looks like he's just stopped just short of kicking it again. And then he admires it, and he's like, oh man, this is really terrible. And it's like, well, it could have gone out that back window, and wouldn't that have been terrible? And then it does. So, you know, it is really well done in that you kind of knew that was basically what was going to happen, but they were able to draw it out pretty effectively so that you were just like, maybe it's just not going to quite go out. Oh, wait, it does. And, you know, he realizes if he's going to have to deal with it, he's going to have to take the heat for it. He's like, nope. Ferris is like, you know, you shouldn't do that. Like, you know, he steps in here and he tries to be a good person to cover for his friend, because he's not enough of a jerk that he's actually trying to take advantage of Cameron to the point where he would want him to get in trouble for this. And he seriously would step in and take this for Cameron, even though he didn't put it at the bottom of the ravine. It was all his idea that got them there. And so Cameron's like, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to face facts. I'm going to deal with it. You know, I got all these unresolved dad issues that I'm going to put right. And then we never see him again. So Godspeed.
It's a good moment for Cameron. He decides to take control and take responsibility for his life. And you finally get a glimpse that he might be in charge, and he's going to look for the light at the end of the tunnel, and he's actually going to be okay. And then we do a slow push in, and he smiles, and, you know, he's going to be good from now on. Ferris isn't worried about him anymore.
Yeah. Only the part that you don't see is when he gets sent to military academy. It would have been nice to have some actual resolution on screen for him of that being resolved. Although, you know, instead of just hanging it there, but it ends in such a way, this movie, that you're just like, well, no, obviously everything was fine for him. And the, you know, Ferris says goodbye to Sloane, at presumably again her house. And then, he starts to head back to his house on foot. While all this had been happening, Jennifer Grey was at the police station because she had called in that someone had broken into her house, but the police didn't find anybody and then hauled her in and called her mother. Because there's nothing worse than, I don't know, you know, it's good detective work that they didn't find the wallet. But the she gets in trouble with the mom, and she's waiting there in order to be taken home, and has her little conversation with Charlie Sheen, who is on drugs in this film, which is very out of character for him. he's such a fine, upstanding stand-up guy that this is quite alarming. Only it's not, because totally does drugs. You have the conversation about how, you know, oh, she hates her brother. And he's like, okay. And then, you know, I know somebody you could talk to. She says, if you say Ferris Bueller, I can't remember what the exact threat is, but something about testicles.
Yeah, you lose a testicle.
Yes. And then he says, oh, you've heard of him. And then there's just like close up on the fist, just clenching. That's nice. But then they get along famously right before the mom comes in. So again, that doesn't look great for her. She gets in the mom's station wagon and they drive. Well, actually, I think it's the dad's station. Somehow the parents switched cars or something, because the dad's driving around in an Audi station wagon that says like mom with two M's, three M's on it. So they run into Ferris when they're driving back, and the mom's all like, oh, you ruined my Vermont deal. Because, of course, she's a real estate agent. Jennifer Grey, instead of saying, hey, mom, look, it's Ferris, she decides she's going to race him home.
This whole thing with Charlie Sheen has really changed her for in a number of ways. I mean, she's more relaxed when she finally gets back to the house, as noted by the fact that she doesn't rat him out when he's in the backyard. But she's also kind of like got this like playing around brotherly kind of competition thing, rather than like, I'm just going to get him in trouble because I'm pissed off. But she's dramatically changed, more so in than just the fact that she tells Charlie Sheen to call her by a name that is not her name, which is weird. I still don't understand that line. Know what I'm talking about?
I don't understand. I mean, I like that they gave her a character arc. She doesn't appear in many scenes in the film, but she's given quite a lot to do, and she has a change over the course of the film. She could have been like Rooney, where it's just about being spiteful and bitter and horrible through the entire run of the picture. But she diverges, and she realizes that it's more important that she not be spiteful and bitter and angry and hate her brother.
Love in a police station. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Just threaten somebody with a wallet and then throw it in a big puddle of mud.
that wakes up the dog.
Yeah. Oh, I love the sound effect too when she throws it off screen and there's that bloop.
Yep.
That's nice. Shuts the door and then the dog attack. And all the while, parents are home and they totally don't hear any of that. Totally don't care. So good for them. Good parents.
I mean, all of the flowers from all the people wishing Ferris well probably dampened the sound in the house substantially. A lot of extra foliage in there.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. All that sound baffling.
Mm-hmm.
Ferris runs upstairs somehow, gets into bed real quick. Doesn't seem suspicious at all when the parents come in, and everything's fine. The end. Yay.
Throws the baseball at the stereo to turn off his snoring machine.
Yeah. Well, you know, they didn't have, it was the style. So
I love the keyboard with like the 5 1/4 floppy or whatever that, plays various sounds when he pushes the keys.
The bodily ill noises that it makes. Yeah.
Yeah, when he just arbitrarily calls the payphone that's in the hall of the high school.
Yeah. Modern listeners will note that payphones used to be these phones you would call or send calls from that you would put money into. And they would be everywhere, including inside of schools. It's crazy.
Yeah, they were phones owned by a place or in public, not owned by a human being. So they didn't move. The people moved around the phone.
Yeah. You know what they could have done?
Hmm.
They could have had one of those nice 1980s cell phones, and then they could have put it on a dog, and then it could have been a mobile crime lab with a phone. Would have been good.
This better not be the second or third act. Your pitch is going down right now.
I don't think that would be a good idea. Nobody wants a dog that makes phone calls.
Did your high school have payphones?
It did.
How many?
It did.
Do you remember where they were?
I don't remember how many, but there were a couple by the auditorium and some in the courtyard area where it was an old school that had like a weird layout where they had expanded stuff. So there was like a weird courtyard in between wings of the school.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think ours were by the cafeteria, by the vending machines outside.
Oh, no. Our vending machines were in a stairwell, not near the cafeteria, and you could get Pop-Tarts. I like the brown sugar Pop-Tarts.
I had one of those today.
Oh, those are not healthy for you, Dan.
No, that's why I only had one.
Oh, good. Half is not good. high schools, how do they work?
Do they work? Ferris Bueller seems to have learned an awful lot about life from not going to school.
Yeah, well, that's what Common Core would. No, I don't know. Something
he's,
Obama.
He's very worldly and cultured, and it, I don't think it's on his syllabus.
No, well, that's because he's in a John Hughes movie. So,
I mean, is there a class we could send him to, though, to not wear white leather shoes?
I don't really know.
It's not a good look, especially with the ridiculous socks.
Well, you know, was the something. But the movie is notable also for having the end credits scene where they're playing the wonderful music, which they also played during the Ferrari reveal, by Yellow. Although, if you're a viewer of Always Sunny in Philadelphia, you'll recognize it from the episode Sweet D Has a Heart Attack as Day Bow Bow.
Yeah, man, come on, help me out here.
Oh, hold on a second, bro. This is a perfect opportunity. I'm going to hang out in his office and pretend I'm the new guy.
I don't think that's going to work, dude.
Have you seen the secret of my success?
They're going to catch on to you.
Yeah, but before they do, I will come up with an idea that will save the company millions and they'll be forced to promote me.
Are you sure? How's that movie end, dude?
I can't remember. Actually, oh, yeah, he bangs that old lady, and then they play that song from the 80s, Day Bow Bow.
What the hell is Day Bow Bow?
Day Bow Bow.
Ch-ch-ch-ch-ca. Oh, Day Bow Bow. Oh, yeah. Day Bow Bow. Day Bow Bow. Beautiful. Day Bow Bow. No, Max, you're still.
Hello, beautiful.
At least give him his mail.
Which. You know, it's that 80s movies. Yeah. So it end all the 80s movies with. And they do. They end it with that. And he gets on the bus and he's defeated and he's offered a gummy bear.
It's an incredibly long, protracted, very, very slow scene. It was almost weird how slow it was.
Yeah, well, they had a lot of credits to get through. But it's pretty funny, actually. And then the final thing is our Joss Whedon end credit, Ferris tells everybody to go home. Like, what are they still doing in the theater? Get out of here.
Well, we see that in the next movie, Ferris is going to fight Thanos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he's got to do it himself now.
Sure. Just get out of his house.
Yeah.
We're terrible at this.
I don't know how to end. Okay, the podcast is over. Go home, everyone.
Just leave.
Unless you're already at home listening to our podcast, then don't leave. Stay where you are, but throw the phone across the room.
You know, the gummy bear is more unpackaged candy that's in a precarious place. Like, what were there not wrappers on candy back in the 80s? I don't get it.
Well, you would buy it in bulk to save on money.
Did they have Costco back then?
Well, no, but you remember you'd go to the grocery store and they'd have those clear plastic bins and you'd buy the bulk candy and they'd have the root beer ones.
Where you scoop it out of the plastic bin with the metal shovel thing.
Yeah, and you put it in one of those produce bags and you'd weigh it. I didn't do that because it was incredibly unsanitary.
Eat them. They would grab them with their hands and just like pick little pieces out and try them in the store.
Yeah, well, people do that with produce too. So they'll just like eat the grapes on their way around the store and out. Even though you have to weigh the grapes to charge somebody.
And clean them. But I've never seen anyone just eating grapes walking around a grocery store.
Oh my God, work at a grocery store, Dan. It'll change your life. You can just see all the stupid, weird crap people do.
Did you work at a grocery store?
Yeah.
Oh, how long? That's awesome.
When I was in high school, I worked at a cash and carry, spelled with a K and another K. So that's two Ks. It is no longer called that. It was owned by Food Lion. Well, it was a company that existed. Then it was bought by Food Lion. And notably, they removed their policy of matching any competitor's coupon. And if anything was if any price was wrong on the shelf, that they would get it for $1. Which I cannot tell you the number of times that I worked there for. Like years and years and years, and that policy had been gone for like 10 years prior, and people would still come in and expect that if they caught something that was wrong on a receipt. And it would be like, no, we're just going to fix the amount. And they'd be like, what? You don't get it for a dollar? And then sometimes people would actually turn around and leave because they didn't actually care about standing there while I would get them their change for 10 cents.
Did any of them say, I won't pay that price, but I'd buy that for a dollar?
No one said that, Dan.
See, they call that a callback.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was it fun? Like, was it like Go?
No, I think I wanted to burn the place to the ground. Not that I really did, but just, you know, in my mind, sometimes I would.
Did the grocery store eventually get burned down? You're trying to cover yourself right now?
No, it didn't. But they did remodel after I left, and they turned into a company called Sweet Bay. And then they got bought by Winn-Dixie, and so now they turned into Winn-Dixie. And if there's anything worse than this, in the South than Winn-Dixie, then I don't know what it is. Winn-Dixie's not a good grocery store.
I've never been to any of those grocery stores that you've just mentioned.
Okay, well,
some of those sound like fictitious places out of a John Hughes movie.
Well, they are fictitious places, but they wouldn't be out of a John Hughes movie, because the only time that a John Hughes movie ever took place in Florida was when the family was in Miami in Home Alone 2. Lost in New York.
Did they go to any funny grocery stores there?
No, they didn't. It just rained, remember?
Hmm.
Because that's what it does in Florida. It rains, Dan. Sunshine State.
Is that what it's called?
Yes. That terrible, terrible Sunshine State.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did you ever skip high school? Skip a day?
Not really.
What does not really mean?
Well, I mean, it's like sick. So let's. Were you big on skipping days?
No. I think they even had the sort of. It was informal. It wasn't like a real thing, but, you know, the whole senior ditch day thing. I don't think I even did that. I think because there was nothing to do. I went to school and there was nobody there.
Yeah. Well, there was a big crackdown, too, on absenteeism because of Jeb Bush or something. I don't remember. Mm. So that was a thing. But anyway, enough about high school, which I hated and despise and detest. And can't say enough bad things about. Let's refocus on ending our podcast, which was a good thing, which is a good podcast that we had.
Mm.
with dogs that were solving crime.
Yeah, this is a good movie. Mm-hmm. If only everyone's high school experience was as nice as Ferris Bueller's, everyone would be much more well adjusted, I think.
Or in jail.
Or in jail, probably in jail, or in a terrible car accident for speeding around downtown Chicago in a Ferrari.
Yes. Do not attempt at home or abroad.
Especially with a Ferrari like that, which he's probably bummed he wrecked it now, because I think nowadays that Ferrari is worth somewhere in the neighborhood of like $10 million.
Probably.
Yeah. That would be a good investment for old Cameron.
Yeah. Too bad he let it go.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm done. I'm choking.
Did you die? Are you okay?
I'm dying, yes.
Oh.
I'm going to drink some water.
You're not dying, Dan.
Mm. Let my water go. Wait, no, that's...
No. That happens much later.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.